So, the topic of our sermon this morning, I came up with it during the early parts of the pandemic when we were all shut in. There were people who were setting out videos of what they called the Fruit Snack Challenge. I don't know if any of you saw these, but essentially what it was is a parent would set a preschooler at a table with snacks in front of them, set up their phone, and then say, hey, I've got to leave for a minute. Don't touch those till I get back. And then the video would show how the child reacted to the fact that this thing they wanted was sitting in front of them, but mom said, don't touch. And so it was kind of funny. Some of the kids sat on their hands so they didn't get tempted. Other ones would kind of look around, try to look everywhere else. Some of them would pick them up and like chew off the corners and then stick them back in. Some of them just gave up and ate the snack. Okay? And they were hilarious. They were just funny. They were just kids being kids, right? Well, I was reading the story, and it turns out that this whole fruit snack challenge was based on a study done way back in the 60s and 70s where it was called the marshmallow challenge. So they brought kids in, did exactly the same thing except with a marshmallow instead of fruit snacks. But then what they did is they tracked those kids as they got older to see if the fact that they had or didn't show, showed or didn't show much self-control as a child, if that carried over as they got older. So, did they have that same problem of waiting? And it turns out that they felt there was a correlation there. The kids kind of did. Kind of grew up into the ones that couldn't wait tended to be the ones that had trouble with their weight because they tended to eat. Well, they're like me. Okay, I can't open the Oreo cookies and eat just one. Once I open the container, it's all or nothing, right? No self-control there. It's about whether they had self-control about how they manage money and just their life in general. Well, story went on, and they recently redid it because the question arose, is there outside influences that cause people to react that way? And so they did a study, and this is the part that got me thinking about religious things. They did a study where they brought the kids in, and before they did the marshmallow challenge, they sat them down and they gave them crayons and markers to play with. And then after a little bit, the adult in the room would say, hey, give me those markers and crayons. I'm going to go get you some new, better ones. Okay? Well, in half the cases, they did exactly what they said they were going to do. And they came back and they gave the kids the new crayons, the new markers. But the other half, they never came back. So they took the kids' markers and crayons, and then they never came back. Well, those kids who didn't get the new markers and crayons were more likely then to not have self-control when it came to the marshmallow. And the theory was, well, if you lie to them about if you wait, you'll get something better, they're like, well, I'm not going to wait because you might take away what I got now and I'll get nothing to show for it. That's the part that made me start to think. And do we have that problem in society today as it relates to religion? I grew up in the Akron, Ohio area. In the Akron, Ohio area, back when I was a kid, there was a lot of religion. We were the home of Rex Humbard. Don't know if you've ever heard of Rex Humbard, but he was one of the first televangelists. At one time, there were 5,000 members who went to this church of his in Cuyahoga Falls. Basically, what he preached was, if you give me money, you'll either get more money, or if you've got a health issue, you'll get it healed. Guess what? Neither one of those was true. Then come along Ernest Angley. Ernest Angley was kind of Rex Humbard, except he sounded like Gomer Pyle. And he did exactly the same thing. He offered exactly the same thing. And at one time, there were over 5,000 people that went to his services. There was a big Baptist Church, the Akron Baptist Temple, over 4,000 members. Even within the church itself, I sat down this morning, and as best as I can remember, there was 10 faithful congregations in Akron, all of which had 100 or more people in them, two-thirds of which had 200 to 300 members in them. Today, the Akron Baptist Temple is gone. Ernest Angley's gone. Rex Humbard's gone. There are at least two fewer congregations in the Akron area than there were faithful congregations, and not a single one of them has 200 to 300 people anymore. And I got thinking about, is it because they had expectations that if I'm a religious person, if I do something, something good's going to happen, and that didn't occur. Or at least in their mind, it didn't occur. And so they quit believing. They quit being willing to wait for something that they didn't think was going to come. And so what I want to talk about this morning is how our light shines. Because the question is, do people look at us and say, if that is the type of person who's going to be in heaven, do I want to be part of it? How do they look at us? Is that what they want to be a part of? So the scripture that Nick read this morning is a passage that we've all probably heard many times. We refer to it a lot. But the thing is, I'd like to spend a little bit of time talking about what does that really mean? We talk about it over and over again, and we say that we have to provide a good example. But what does it mean to provide a good example? Well, there's lots of ways. The ones we're going to talk about this morning are related to what we read in 1 Peter chapter 2. And it says, "But ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that ye should show forth the praises of him who hath called you out of darkness into his marvelous light." That you are to show forth. We are to interact with people in a way not that makes us look good. Notice what it is that we're supposed to do. We're supposed to show forth the praises of him who's called us. We are supposed to be making people think about Jesus. Not think about us, think about Jesus. The Pharisees, the Sadducees, the scribes in the time of Jesus, they made it all about them. Long prayers, long fringes on their garments, lots of outward show. And Jesus took them to task for that. He told them, you're going to get your reward on heaven, but or here, but you're not going to get it in heaven. So, as we think about then how we interact with people, one of the first things we've got to remember is we cannot be a stumbling block. Luke chapter 17, verses 1 through 2. Then said he unto his disciples, "It is impossible that but that offenses will come, but woe unto him for whom they come. It were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and he cast into the sea, than that he should offend one of these little ones." A stumbling block, keep in mind, is something that hinders your progress forward. Hinders it. Doesn't stop it. Doesn't make it impossible to gain. But it hinders it. And so, the people that are hindered, if they stop, that stumbling block didn't stop them. They stopped themselves. They're going to answer for that. But we are going to answer if we become stumbling blocks, whether they stop or not. So just putting that hindrance in the way is something that we're going to have to answer for. They will answer for whether or not they allowed it to stop them. We'll answer for having put it there. And we need to remember that and think about that. So how we interact with people then needs to be patterned after Christ. 1 Peter 2, verse 21, "For even hereunto were ye called, because Christ offered for us, leaving us an example that we should follow his steps." How we interact with people needs to be patterned after Christ. We sing a song. If you want to grab your song, we're not going to sing it, but I would like you to look at it. Number 230. And I think it's a song that probably the majority of people have sung at some time. But it's "Let the Beauty of Jesus Be Seen." That's the title of it. And specifically, I want to look at verse 4. It says, "From the dawn of the morning to close of day, in example, in deeds, and in all you say. Lay your gifts at his feet, ever strive to keep sweet. Let the beauty of Jesus be seen in you. The writer of the song there points out three things. How we interact with people, we need to pay attention in our example. And our example is in how we live our life. It needs to be in our deeds. Our deeds are how we treat others. And in all you say, or in the words that we speak. So he's really saying that we need to pay attention to how we interact with other people, and how we live, how we treat them, and how we speak to them. So those are what we're going to talk about a little bit yet this morning. So some examples for us to consider. So how we spoke to others in all that we say. How we sacrificed for others. Lori talked about that last week. That's the deeds. How we cared about and helped others. That's the deeds. And how he lived his life, that's the example. So let's start with by how we talk to others. 1 Peter 2:22 says, "Who did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth." Guile equals deceit. Just another word for deceit. And deceit is defined as the act of causing someone to accept as true or valid what is false or invalid. So that's when we deceive somebody. So we need to carefully consider the words we speak. We need to be very careful that what we say is 100% truthful. We really need to make sure of that. And then we need to make sure we clearly differentiate between fact and opinion. I'm going to give an example here. I have a Ford pickup truck. I think it's pretty good. I've never had any problem with Ford pickup trucks. My opinion is Ford makes the best pickup truck. Is that a fact or an opinion? Well, I was going to use Bruce and say Chevy today, but now he's went and switched, so we're going to have to change it to Ram, okay? Bruce might think Ram makes the best pickup truck. Who's right and who's wrong? I don't know. I don't know how you tell. A lot of it has to do with how lucky you are with the one you own, right? I don't know. But if I absolutely positively say something is fact when it's my opinion, then I'm being deceitful. I'm acting with God. I need to be careful of that. Paul, in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 6 and 7, said, "I speak this by permission and not of commandment. For I would that all men were even as I myself, but every man hath his proper gift of God, one after this manner and another after that." Paul was talking about getting married. It was Paul's opinion that was better at that time that they didn't, because of the hardships that they were going to be dealing with, the difficulties of that time. But it wasn't a commandment, and he made it very clear, this is my opinion, this is not my commandment. We just need to make sure we do that. We've all got opinions, we need to have them, but we need to make sure that we label them as such. When we speak the truth, if we say something is truth, then we need to be able to find scripture and verse that backs that up. We talk about it all the time. We speak where the Bible speaks. We're silent where the Bible is silent. We just need to live that. Be careful of that. Because when we don't, we're setting ourselves up to discourage somebody else. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 29 tells us to let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace unto the hearers. Corrupt means of poor quality, unfit for use, or worthless. And here the passage tells us exactly what it needs to be good for. Okay? It needs to edify others, which means to promote another's growth in Christian wisdom, piety, holiness, and happiness. If we do that, then those words will not corrupt them. They will not cause them then to be worthless or unfit. So we need to carefully think about what we say. Because in Matthew chapter 12, verses 36 and 37, We're told, I say unto you that every idle word that men speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned. Idle equals careless. Careless words. We need to take the words we speak very seriously because we are going to give an answer for them. As the verse points out, the words we say can either justify us or condemn us. I saw this little thing on Facebook the other day. Mom was getting ready to send daughter off to college. And they're doing something, and the mom takes the toothpaste and she squirts it all out on the counter. And then she looks at the daughter and says, put the toothpaste back in the tube. And the daughter looked at her and said, Mom, there's absolutely, positively no way that I can get the toothpaste back into the tube. Mom said, you're right. Now apply that to the things you say to other people. Because once those words come out, they can't be taken back. They can't be put back in. They're forever out there. The effect they're going to have on people, it's done. You can't take that back. I thought that was pretty appropriate. Think about our words like the toothpaste in the tube. Second thing we talked about a little bit was this concept of being willing to sacrifice for others. Philippians chapter 2, verses 5 through 8. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, and took upon him the form of a servant, and was made in the likeness of men. And being found in fashion of man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. Ori gave an excellent sermon last week talking about the suffering that Jesus endured. He endured a lot. It was horrible. And you know, those other two men with him, they suffered similar fates. But you know what? The one big difference was Jesus had it in his power to change it. The other two men's fate was sealed. Once they were condemned, what was going to happen was going to happen. Nothing they could do about it. Jesus had the power to change it, but he didn't. At any time, he could have made it all stop. At any time, he could have defeated the Romans. He could have walked out of there scot-free. But he didn't. Why? Because he sacrificed for us. We needed his sacrifice. He didn't need us. We needed him, and he put us before self. So we need to think about that as we go through our lives. I don't pause here for just a moment because I want to give kudos to this congregation. You know, we're living in a difficult time. This whole COVID thing's got a lot of people pretty stressed out. We have all done what is necessary so we can come and worship. People have distance, wearing masks, doing the things that they should do. And they're doing them because it helps somebody else out. And congratulations, kudos, because that's not true everywhere. The congregation that my mom and dad go to, the one I used to go to in Ohio, is not behaving this way. In Ohio, the law has said that you can have church services, but you've got to wear a mask. The members there wear their masks as they walk from the car to the building so that people outside see them being good Christians. They walk through the door and they strip them off. They refuse to wear their masks in the auditorium, in the service. My parents won't go. My mom and dad are both very, very high risk. They won't go. They're not the only ones. Nobody cares. They have the right to do what they want to do. They're not willing to sacrifice for somebody else. Visitors walked in last week. My sister let me know that those visitors turned around and walked back out because they weren't doing what they were supposed to do. That is an example of not sacrificing for others, of not sacrificing for the well-being of others, of not putting others before self. Kudos to this group for not doing that. I think we've put forth a very good example of how we should treat each other. Our willingness to sacrifice for others. Philippians 2, verses 3 through 4. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem other better than themselves. Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. These verses very clearly warn us against being self-centered. We can't be self-centered and be following the example that Jesus set, because Jesus was not self-centered. Jesus thought about and cared about and was willing to sacrifice for others. You know, there are a lot of experts out there that tell you how important it is to take care of yourself. Right now, there's all sorts of stuff out there. Make sure you take time for yourself. Stand up for yourself. Right? The idea is to put individual needs of self above those of the people around us. My question for you is, what if Jesus had done that? What if Jesus had put his self needs above ours? He certainly wouldn't have lived through what Ori talked about last week. He wouldn't have done that. Nobody would. He didn't do it. He put our needs above his. He was not self-centered. That's the example that we need to follow. Uh-oh. Oops, there we go. How we care for and help others. In Matthew chapter 9, verse 36, we read, "But when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them, because they fainted and were scattered abroad as sheep having no shepherd." Jesus felt sorry for the common people of that day because the religious leaders of the time had failed them. They weren't leading them. They weren't giving them good examples. They weren't helping them to serve God. They hadn't fulfilled their duties. Those people needed to be taught, to be guided, and it hadn't happened. Doesn't that sound an awful lot like the world today? The examples that I gave at the beginning, think about that. Those people were looked upon as being religious leaders. You know what they all did? They all lined their pockets. They all lined their pockets. They all got rich. They all lived high off the hog. They all did well. And they disappointed a lot of people and caused a lot of people to turn away from God. They didn't bring them to them. They turned them away. Next week, I believe that Brian's lesson is going to be spent a lot of time about our teaching of others. And so I'm not going to cover much of that. But that's really important. That's really important is, do we take the time, do we put forth the effort, do we take advantage of the opportunity to teach others about Jesus? I don't know. Like I said, Brian's going to talk about it, but it's something for us to definitely consider. Oops. In Matthew chapter 15 and verse 32, Jesus said, "Then Jesus called his disciples unto him and said, I have compassion on the multitude, because they continue with me now 3 days and have nothing to eat, and I will not send them away fasting, lest they faint in the way." Not only did Jesus have compassion about their spiritual situation, he had compassion about their worldly situation. These were people that had been following Jesus for some period of time, and it wasn't like today where you could go shoot into the McDonald's drive-thru and grab a bite to eat. They're out there, and there was nothing to eat. They hadn't eaten. They were hungry. And he felt bad for them. And we all remember that he took care of them. We've got to think about that as well. Jesus, on more than one occasion, thought about people's feelings, about their physical situation. In Luke chapter 7, he had compassion on a widow whose only son had died. He comforted her and raised her from the dead. We all remember the shortest verse in the Bible, right? Jesus wept. Why did Jesus weep? Why did Jesus weep? Why did Jesus weep? Because he saw the sorrow that the death of Lazarus had brought upon the people. He felt sorry for them. He felt compassion toward them. In Matthew chapter 25, verses 31 through 34, we read, "When the Son of Man shall come in his glory and all the holy angels with him, Then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory, and before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, Come ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungered, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee hungered, and fed thee, or thirsty, and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger, and took thee in, or naked, and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick, or in prison, and came unto thee? And the king shall answer and say unto them, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of my brethren, you have done it unto me. Question for each one of us to ask ourselves, what have we as individuals done to help someone? Have we ever gone out of our way to do something to make someone's day better, to help them with the struggle? If we have, that's going to be a good thing. If we haven't, that's not going to be so good come the day of judgment. Last thing I want to talk about is the example we set, how we live our lives. John 5:30, I can of myself do nothing. As I hear, I judge, and my judgment is just, because I seek not my own will, but the will of the Father which hath sent me. Jesus let his light shine by always doing the will of the Father. Everything about his life was centered on serving the Father. It was not about making himself look good or getting glory for himself. What would people say our lives are centered on? Would they say our lives are centered on Christ? Or are they centered on self? Are they centered on worldly things? What are our lives centered on? What do people see when they look at us? In 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 12, we read, Let no one despise your youth, but be an example to believers in word, in conduct, in love, in spirit, in faith, and purity. These verses point out that we will certainly stand out from the world if we follow the example that Jesus set. Politicians, businessmen, athletes, celebrities, they're all really good at talking a good game. But they spend all their time talking. They forget about the doing. Paul told Timothy that his speech, his actions needed to provide an example. Would people look at us and say we are all about the talk? Or would they say that we're walking the talk? I don't know. We each have to answer that question. John 3:13. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. As we go about trying to do good things, as we go about trying to serve God, as we go about trying to have people see in us the attempt to serve God, we need to always keep in mind to do it humbly, because it's not about us. Jesus did it humbly, even though he was God. He still did the Father's will. We need to make sure that that's how we go about providing an example, in exactly the same way Jesus did, in a humble manner, focused on putting the praise to God, not to self. There's another song we sing. We won't go through all of this, but number 512. Number 512 talks about the world's Bible and the fact that, like it or not, in a lot of cases, we are as close to a Bible as some people are going to get. Watching how we live our lives, listening how we speak to others, looking at how we treat others, that is going to be the Bible for some people, and the only way that we might be able to get some people to recognize the need to follow Jesus. The very last part of this, what if our hands are busy with other work than his? What if your feet are walking where sin's allurement is? What if our tongues are speaking of things his lips would spurn? There's a big question. How can we hope to help him and hasten his return? What kind of example are we setting? I want to leave you, this will be the last part of the sermon, I want to leave you with a thought. This was something that Donna Blythe from Grinnell posted. Sam caught it and sent it to me. I thought it was very appropriate. We're going through a very difficult time right now, and it isn't all just because of COVID. We're living in a country very divided politically. We're living in a country dealing with social unrest. We're living in a country where people are distrustful of anything, in a country that it is increasingly more difficult to get honest, unbiased answers and to know where to turn for information. We're living in a country where more and more likely that people are not going to be nice to each other. That's who we're dealing with. We're more and more likely to run into somebody who's going to confront us or have a problem. Well, imagine that you're holding a cup of coffee when somebody comes along and bumps into you. Shakes your arm, something like that, and the coffee spills everywhere. Why did you spill the coffee? Well, our typical answer would be, well, because that person bumped into me or shook my arm. They caused me to spill the coffee. And that's true. But the thing I want you to think about is a little bit different spin on it. You spilled coffee because there was coffee in the cup. If there had been tea in the cup, you'd have spilled tea. If there had been soda, you'd have spilled soda. We're going to go through life, and we're going to get bumped. We're going to get shook. What's going to come out? What's in our cup? That's where that story ended. What's in your cup? What's in you? Are you going to live the example that Jesus set, or will something else come out, something that will discourage and cause others not to do those things they need to do? That's the sermon for this morning, and I hope it causes us to think about how our light shines. Because we need to make sure that our light shines in a way that it glorifies God and that it causes others to turn to Him. If you've never obeyed the gospel, then you're not living a life that matches what Jesus would do. He's explained what he expects of us, and that is to be obedient, to obedience to the gospel. If we are a Christian, but we're not living our life as a Christian should be, then we're also not guilty of letting our light, or we are guilty of not letting our light shine in the manner in which it should be. If we can help you with either one of those, we'd ask you to come forward as we stand and as we sit.